Welcome to PTW Office Hours, where we invite authors, writers, publishing professionals to have casual conversations around craft. Grab your journal, a cup of tea or coffee, and get ready to take notes. This is PTW Office Hours, brought to you by Permission to Write.
Awesome. So for all of you here, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the wonderful Mahogany L. Brown, who I first was introduced to actually at the Well Read Black Girl Festival, and had the opportunity to read your beautiful essay in the anthology, Well Read Black Girl as well. Mahogany is a Brooklyn-based writer, educator, activist, mentor, and curator, and is the Urban Word NYC Artistic Director, Executive Director of Bowie Poetry Club, founder of Women Writers of Color, Reading Room, Director of BLM at Pratt Programming, and Poetry Coordinator at St. Francis College. She has beat me in job titles and descriptions. I thought I did a lot. But she has also been featured on HBO's Brave New Voices. Her poetry picture books include Black Girl Magic and Woke Baby. And you can watch Mahogany's PBS NewsHour brief but spectacular appearance. In that segment, she performs her poem, Black Girl Magic. So that is like, you know, that is the PR bio, right? But we definitely want to give you the floor and the opportunity just to introduce yourself as well.
Okay, thank you, Ashley. Thank you everyone for making time. I am a poet, writer, organizer, educator. I have released my first YA novel, Chlorine Sky. So I'm excited to be here and talk about that, because that journey is much different than the other 16 books that I've had published, anthologized, and released. It's not even the same ballpark. I don't even know if it's in the same country, if I'm honest. The writing portion, yes, but like everything else, just different. So I'm glad to have made it out alive on the other side to see you all, Black, beautiful, friendly faces. And I just actually turned in my second YA novel. It is not in verse, it is a hybrid. So it's poetry and prose. And I'm also utilizing all the ways in which young people speak. So we have text messages coming up, we have raps, all of it is there. So yeah, I think that's it. I live in Brooklyn. I had my first dose of the vaccine, and excited to be here with you today.
Oh, I love that. I have been desperately trying to find the vaccine. I'm based in Philly, and man, PA, it's not as easy trying to find those things. But
Sorry. It's intense in PA. Yeah. My daughter's there. I have no idea when she's going to get it.
I know. It's insane. But I love it. So you know, we talked about right there in the bio, we kind of talked about just a lot of things that you've done, the fact that this is not your first work. So what has really been the journey kind of to get to this point? Like, something that we've talked about a lot in this community is the idea that like we grow up and want to be writers, but we don't necessarily see people like us doing it, right? So what has really been the journey to even get you to the point where you felt like, oh, writing is something I can actually do and that I could do it for a career?
Well, that's funny, because I've always wanted to be a writer. Back when I was in fourth grade and I did my first in-class assignment, where we had to create the book from start to finish, even the cardboard cover, right? So I knew I wanted to do it. I just had no idea how to make it happen. By the time I was 21, 22, 23, I was a journalist. And I thought, as long as I'm able to write, I'm fine. I'll find ways to bring poetry in. 2 years later, fast forward, my editors are like, please stop putting the words cascade in when you're writing about Beanie Siegel. Doesn't match. And I'm like, but it could cascade. You know, like I'm trying to do all this like fluff, lush language and mix it with what I love, right? Which is hip hop. And it wasn't as accepted as it is now. That was back in 2000, 2001. By 2001, I decided to be a full-time writer by any means necessary, which meant I had to allow myself to think outside of the book publishing box. So I was performing poetry. I would facilitate poetry classes. I would have chapbooks for sale. I would tour the world. I started trying to get into anthologies. And a lot of this was chapbook, right? So it's just soft. Kinko's Made and Loved. But when I think by my second or third year of touring in Europe, someone asked if I had a book. And I was like, got this chapbook. She's beautiful. And they're like, no, we need like, you know, something with a barcode because we want to bring it into libraries. And so then I started reaching out to folks back home, publishers, and I was told that I don't have a market, that I wasn't really known in that way. And I just, I just got through performing for 2,000 plus people and I was told I didn't have a market. So then that's when I decided to self-publish, and not just myself, but also friends and colleagues. And that was the beginning of Penmanship Books. We've published everyone from Aja Monet and Donez Smith to Amir Suleiman, who else? Carvin's Lassant, Joshua Bennett. I was just really lucky to like be there at in a time when we just wanted to make beautiful work, right? And have it available at bookstores, and it and that, not to have people, you know, turn their noses up to it. By the time I started grad school, I then started finding other publishing opportunities. I was tired of doing all the work on my own. I wanted to just be an artist. I wanted to know what that felt like because I had 13 years of not that. Everything was me editing, finding the artistic director, getting someone to proofread, going through the issues with the print and the press distributors. I didn't want to do any of that. I just wanted to write that thing, edit that thing, and then move on, right? So my first, I think it was Button Poetry, may have been my first chapbook that I didn't put out. And Yes, Yes Books was my second. And then my full length was released and it received a NAACP nomination. And then I was moving. I was like, okay, I really love being able to just focus on the writing portion. And I want to do more of that. By 2014-15, I did a Girls Write Now, which is a youth writing program. And performing there, this one poem that actually opens the poem of Chlorine Sky introduced me to my first Big Five editor. She came up afterwards and said, "This, you're amazing. I would love to talk about, you know, you and your voice in YA." And I'd heard kind of the pitch before, and I just wasn't buying it. I was like, "Yeah, sure. Email me. Sounds great." And I left. And then she emailed me, and I think I still was a bit distant. Like, we met in maybe October. She said, "Can you meet for lunch?" I said, "I'm not available till January." I don't know why I said that. I just was like, really, you know, it's like I was busy. You heard all the job titles, but you can make time for like the dream. I just didn't believe it. I had had so many people tell me, yes, maybe, and then go missing that I just kind of, I don't know. I just, it felt too good to be true. Fast forward, my friend Jason Reynolds tells me for the umpteenth time after 5 years of asking me, when am I going to write something for YA? I tell him about meeting this editor. He says, "What's the name of the publishing house?" And I didn't know it because it was an imprint of Macmillan. So I didn't realize it was like as big as it was. And I just said, "Oh, Roaring Brook." And he's like, "Oh, that's Macmillan. They're the Big Five. That's huge." And I thought, oh no. I told her I can't talk to her for 3 months. Oh, no. I messed it up already, sabotaged myself. And so he's like, "It's all good. Just, you know, go in there with all of the things that you're capable of doing and listen, because they have things that they want to talk about and you never know." And sure enough, I went in. She said, "That poem, is it a book?" And I said, "I'm working on it." If I can tell the truth now, I was not working on it. That poem was already done. It was, you know, in a book of poems. I didn't think it was a YA. And she said, I think it is. I said, "Well, I have these other things like Black Girl Magic. I just did it on PBS. It went viral. I had used the last of my financial aid money to make a collector's coffee table edition." That $5,000 was a lot of money for me. I was like, this is it. I don't rent books, you know, I was doing that. And she said, "We want whatever you have. So if you started on this Black Girl Magic book, we would love to publish that. If you are finishing up this YA novel, I would love to help you with that. We want to invest in who you are as a writer and the career you will have. And I had never heard such words before at all. But that was the beginning. After that meeting, I signed a one book deal, which was Black Girl Magic. And it did well enough that I signed a two book deal before I think it even dropped after that. So three books, three book deal in 1 year, all children's books. So Black Girl Magic, Woke Baby, and Woke, A Young Poet's Call to Justice, all came from that moment. All the while I'm working on, you know, this idea of Chlorine Sky. And that's a whole nother, that might be a whole nother question, child. It was.
I love that. I mean, you know, you really hit on a lot of things. You hit on, like, one, not waiting for anyone to give you an opportunity, right? So really just beginning to start that process on your own, which is something that we're always talking about here. I mean, our community is really, like, from published writers to people just starting out, right? Like, it's kind of everything. And so often we talk about this idea of, like, well, is self-publishing better than traditional publishing, or or vice versa? But it's really about your goal, right? It's really what you're trying to get to. Sometimes self-publishing can get you to the space where a traditional publisher is paying attention. All those things are so important. And then you really talked about this idea of, to me, bringing up others with you too, right? And that really being lifting as we climb. So many poets talk about the lack of publishing space for them, because most often, you know, publishers aren't necessarily accepting poetry books. And so making that space for other folks is just definitely an important theme within itself. In talking about Chlorine Sky, you know, it has pieces of your own early friendships intertwined. And so was the process of writing the book cathartic in a way for you? I know you started with the poem that was already constructed, but, you know, how did the rest of that process go of kind of like building around that initial poem?
Yeah, thank you for that, because it started off a bit more autobiographical than it is now, because that poem, it was a snapshot of a moment that, you know, I had survived, which is being a dark skinned Black girl at a pool party in California. My best friend is light skinned and being made the butt of the joke, and she didn't defend me. And I didn't even remember that moment until I looked at like a picture. You know, I used a snapshot picture as a writing prompt. And I remember, like, that's how trauma works though. You block it out, right? You don't remember much. Just like, I just know that's not my friend no more. But then when I looked at the picture, I was like, oh, looking in my eyes, I look like I'm about to cry. I was like, ah, that's right, I remember. So that was definitely autobiographical. But by the time I sat down to do these drafts, the first three drafts were still working from a space of how I was done wrong. And then I started looking up like old pictures on Facebook to see if I had seen the other people from this memory. And so many of them had, life has happened to them. You know what I mean? And it just made me become a little more mindful of the kind of story I want to put out there. Because at the end of the day, we were all kids. And while some of us perpetuated, you know, anti-Blackness and the hate that we learned because it was forced on us, a lot of us didn't survive that, right? So I wanted to make a world adjacent to that world, like, and pull from all sorts of places so that because it wasn't healing. I felt a little more traumatized, and I felt like I would traumatize others if I put it out as is. So to make it a little more elastic, a little more expansive, then I had to start building in these other places and people and fictionalizing it as much as possible. By the time I was done, I just wept. I cried. I did. I was like sad. I was sad for the little girl in the book, but then there's a moment of like redemption that she has, even though I don't know if folks read the book, so I try not to say too much, but I wanted so much for her, and I'd hoped that there was a spark of almost or next up or, you know, around the corner. And so I cried for that.
it gives me so many feels. I think I think with the fact that it was built off, like, you know, sure, this is an adjacent world, but it's built off real experience. And I was immediately taken back to, like, just being a kid. And I thought, wow, that was so stressful. Like, there are different stresses that come with being an adult yes. person, rent and all those things. But my God, the stress of, like, you know, this kind of obsession I felt like she had with Laylee mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. how she was being perceived and mm-hmm. you know and the boy giving you the attention and that feeling so validating, you know what I yes. mean, and us having to grow out of that. So, you know, I love just, it immediately took me there, you know, how we can all have so many different experiences, but immediately you're really, like, transformed back into what that moment in your life meant for you, because it might not have been a pool party for you, right, but it could have been at the roller skating rink or right. you know, just whatever the case may be. So it felt very universal in that way. And so I guess you kind of touched upon it in a way of, like, some of the challenging part maybe was really kind of ensuring to other people's safety in your real life, but do you yeah. feel like there was a most rewarding part about this debut for you?
The most rewarding part, I think I write a lot, and I don't know, it hit different when somebody is holding the book and showing the book. People have made pictures of themselves as the book. It was a lot for me. I was just like, wait, what? That's amazing. And then I felt like, I don't know. I felt like maybe I loved it too much. I don't know. I know it's weird. I don't have an understanding of why we talk ourselves out of loving each other loudly and how good that feels to just be seen, right?
Yes.
But as a voice who is constantly erased, diminished, and disfigured, just to be appropriated from, and them try to sell that back to me, it meant the world that folks are finding some kind of tethering to this, whether young or elders. The idea that we're constantly always having to remind ourselves to take up space. And we have these young people now who are like, oh, this is mine because I said so. And I love that my daughter is that. She's 22. She could care less. I wish I had that. I write from the perspective of, as soon as I grow up, I'm gonna be her. You know what I mean? And I think that's the biggest thing, that there are folks across the generational gap that find a moment in this story that moves them.
I love that you talk about this idea of feeling seen, just because I remember in the essay in the Well Read Black Girl anthology, you talked about feeling seen in Toni Morrison's Bluest Eye.
Yes.
So can you just speak to that a bit? Even when I'm reading, your work, I feel the same feelings that I feel at times when I've read Toni Morrison, and like, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, how could she say it like that? You know what I mean? So can you just speak to a bit to her influence and reading that story and what that has meant for you as a writer?
One, Toni Morrison ain't fair. That's it. Okay. her, not that she wields language like a sword and armor, but that she also wields it like a healing tool. Bananas. So one, you know, forever the boss, a literary god. And Chlorine Sky was like definitely a nod at Sula, but like the younger version, like there's that girl that could take your man and what you gonna do, right? Like, ugh. So I wanted to like kind of pose that reflection for younger people. But when I found Toni Morrison, it was after reading so much Babysitter's Club, Christopher Pike, Go Ask Alice, you know, Beverly Cleary, the Judy Blume, they were great.
Yep.
They were really great storytellers, but I never saw myself, right, ever. Somebody start putting on a scrunchie and I'm like, that ain't me. Someone tried to put, like, everybody can share your pants. That wasn't me. Like, I just didn't see myself. but I love the stories. And so when I read Bluest Eye, as painful as that read was, I knew those girls, right? I knew the girls, I knew the cousins, I knew the sisters, I knew the mother. And in seeing that, I realized like there's a whole other world that I just have to find. I don't know how I'm gonna find it, but once I found her, she was like the legend for me to find other Black women writers, other stories. Toni Morrison is a beacon.
I love that. For me, it was Terry McMillan. That was the moment. I got introduced to Toni Morrison a lot later, but that exact thing of like reading the Babysitter's Club, reading these books, and you're like, okay, but these people in the suburbs and I'm up here in the urban Philadelphia streets. And Terry McMillan's work was the first time I felt like, oh, these are like my aunties. These are like, you know, people that I actually know. So I guess, you know, what has been one thing you haven't been asked about the book that you just want people to know about it?
I don't know. What have I not been asked about the book? You know what? It's come up, but only by my, like, I think by my direction. I haven't been asked about the meaning or the importance of that sibling rivalry between Issa and Sky. And I don't know if folks just write it off like, oh, siblings are mean, but like that sibling relationship, it really colors how Sky moves through the world. So much so she looks for a transplant, right? She looks like for an Issa replacement who has the same bad attitude when it comes to like friendship and taking care of your girlfriends and self-centering and toxicity. But yeah, that hasn't been asked, which I'm always like, I was really intentional about like mirroring them. And I wondered if I did it, well, I don't know. Maybe I didn't do it well enough because it doesn't come up, or then maybe it was whatever. But I'm always surprised that Issa doesn't come up. It's just like, ooh, and Laylee, and Laylee, and Laylee. And I'm like, we're all Laylee. Honestly, we're all Sky, we're all Laylee. We all have our moments of not being considerate of someone. And we don't know whose story we are the villain in. Sometimes they walk away with that and never return, or they never tell us. So I just want to open up the conversation for how we treat each other better.
I love that. You know what? Because I think because I didn't have sisters, I thought, well, maybe that's just sometimes how it is. But the fact that you bring that up, it does kind of register, even that the cousin really like seemed like more of a champion than Issa was for Sky. You know what I mean? Like, and so it, yeah, that did kind of like pass me because I just thought, oh, she just mean. Maybe that's just how sisters are. So I got along with my brother, but I felt like maybe, you know, that was just because we were different sexes and sometimes being two females can be its own thing. But I love that. Thank you for sharing that. So I want to make sure we have enough time for you to read. So I do just want to ask this question because, you know, here we do talk a bit about craft too. A lot of times people are trying to figure out how to balance things, right? So you have a plethora of things that you do, but you said you're writing all the time. So how do you really balance writing with the rest of the work that you're doing?
That's a great question. I don't do it well. I used to do it really good. I moved away in December. We decided to winter abroad where COVID was being taken seriously. My entire family, my entire household had caught COVID-19. So after 8 weeks of not being able to taste or smell and almost having to go to the hospital, I was good. I was like, no, this is a thing. I'll stay home. We were really quarantining, and I caught it literally a year ago. Dang, a year ago this week. So it was like, we need to go somewhere where we don't need to be around people and we still have sun. So I moved to Antigua for 4 months, and my writing process is so much better when I'm not in the city. I don't know if it's the sea air. I don't know if it's the sun. Lie. Maybe it's the rooster that they lied to me and told me roosters only crow in the morning. That's a lie. That joint crow anytime it feel like it. I was doing recordings over and over because here go the cock-a-doodle and the doing. I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to finish this. But the writing was happening. And I was just, every 45 minutes I write, I get up and I take a beat for 15 minutes. Make sure I have a full lunch, 1 hour, make sure I'm doing some kind of workout. So I would walk to and from the beach, which was about a mile and a half. But the writing, I ended up writing about 8 hours a day for 3 months, easy. And when I'm here in New York, not the same. I'm lucky to get out like a good 2 hours. I wake up pretty early to do it before, you know, people get to moving. And then of course, during the pandemic, there's a lot of, you know, these Zoom moments. So I'm trying to like not lose, you know, my momentum. And so the things that are on deck, I have another book that just got picked up with the Crown. And I turned in the treatment for Chlorine Sky as a TV show. So that has been a lot because I don't write TV, I watch it. But I've been trying. I've been watching all of the teen joints on Netflix. Shout out to them for having the plethora of things. And I just put it on. And if it catches my attention, that means it's good. And if it doesn't, I'm mindful of that too. Like, okay, that's what I don't want my show to do. I don't want you to turn it on and forget your TV's on.
I love that though, but I got some really great advice from a TV writer actually that works on This Is Us. And when we were talking about kind of making that transition into TV or film, she said, one of the things that you need to know is you don't need to know anything about TV or film because you already have an understanding of voice. Yeah. And so she was just like, quite honestly, most people in a TV writing room are still trying to figure that out.
Yes.
She's like, but when you have a voice, she was like, you when you already know your voice, you can write anything. So I'm excited to see the Chlorine Sky TV show when it comes out.
y'all have a special invite for the red carpet situation.
Hey, yes, I would love it. So we definitely want to hear a little from the book. So okay. You know, if you'd love to read an excerpt.
You have a favorite part, Ashley?
You know what? I don't have a favorite. I just was like so intrigued by the language and like just loving like, oh my God, I just love how you were able to get into that childhood voice. Like, you know, like, and I have a favorite line. So not necessarily a favorite part, but my favorite line, which I'm literally using in my class that I'm teaching high school kids this evening. Okay. And it's such a small line, but it says, he says, every child deserved to be the sun. And that stuck out to me so much because I literally told my husband, everyone wants their moment in the sun. And so when I saw that line, I was like, oh my God, like, you know, it just made my head want to explode. So happy to hear, you know, one of your favorite passages for sure.
Okay. I really like, I like the mom's rules because I feel like everybody been there.
Yes.
Okay. And so this is after the kick up between Laylee and Sky. Sky now has gained the attention of Clifton and she's so proud of herself that she's like, all right, Laylee gonna be my friend after she sees that I'm finally stepping up and Laylee cannot be bothered. My first time out with Clifton. I know the world is going to end. Mama don't play that company over when grown folks out the house business. And even though Issa is home with cousin Inga, they ain't grown. They're just teenagers with a curfew that ain't dictated by the sun going down and the streetlights coming on. They're just teenagers who curse when the neighbors are looking, but never when their own parents are looking because they ain't got a death wish. They're just teenagers with a taste for the kind of freedom they've only seen on sitcoms, the kind with two-parent households, not homes like ours. More like Inga's mom, Auntie Renee, who saves coupons and works every day, clockwork ready for the water company. More like Inga's mom, Auntie Renee, who on her day off will drive by different houses with for sale signs plastered in their yard, with her eyes dancing bright and dancing and singing Luther Vandross to whoever is in the passenger seat. More like mama who tells me to ignore Issa's attitude because she works too many hours and ain't got time to listen to her arguments when she finally comes home. More like mama, who calls me her baby, mostly because I'm the last born, who works too many hours to make it to my basketball games, and the house better be clean because you don't want to get on her bad side. More like mama, the sweetest woman I've ever known, who still got rules that we better follow because ain't nobody in this house more grown than her. The rules are easy. No boys in the house when I'm gone. Nobody who don't live here in the house when I'm gone. Who left on the light? Who do you think you are? Nobody mess up the kitchen before I get home to cook. Nobody eat all the cereal. Nobody eat all the bread. Nobody go begging for food like we're poor. You trying to make me look like a bad parent? You acting like you don't know no better? No, you can't go over to that house. Yes, you can go to the park, be back before dark. Nobody walked the dog. Nobody folded the clothes. Who do you think I am? I work all day and got to come home and work too. No fighting in the house. No running from fights. That school better not call my phone. Don't steal snacks from the store. We ain't broke. Make ramen for snack. Make a peanut butter sandwich. Don't use all my butter. Don't eat all my cheese. Take the chicken out the freezer. Ain't nobody take the chicken out the freezer. Nobody call my phone unless the house is on fire. Watch your mouth. Who do you think you're talking to? I'm not one of your little friends. Cool. Thank you.
I love it. I love how I feel like this is new, right? So like after I was reading it, I was like, man, I want to see if I can buy this for all my girls, like for all the girls in my class, because it feels new, but then it also feels like I'm 34. So it also feels like when I was growing up, like, you know what I mean? Just the things that don't seem to change, you know, as different as we are. I just love it. I love the voice of it. And my mom was the same way. I couldn't, like, you couldn't have people over, couldn't spend the night, couldn't do nothing. And that line, like, cause nobody is more grown than mama. Like, I'm like, yes. Yes. So I want to make sure if folks have questions, I do have a question in regard to writing in verse, cause I cannot imagine. So while you guys get your questions, please have questions, take this awesome opportunity. Did you write, because I know you had the poem to kind of start things, but then was the process then linear, or did the process then kind of jump around and then it take kind of putting it back together? That would be my question on craft.
Yeah. So, okay. Here's the thing about novel and verse. It is less about the poetry and more about the emotions, conversations, and the destination. So like you can use the poetic language and the figurative, you know, the verse and the line breaks, you can use all of that. But if you don't have a plot that is steady, if you don't have an arc that is present, if you don't have a streamline that is consistent, none of it matters. It looks like a really bad journal, right? And so my first and second draft, I thought, killed it. All these poems I do, and now I just turn this book in and they send my gal, and I was like, this is trash. Like, it was bad, y'all. It was big bad. Like, I cried. I ugly snot cry. I was like, I'm gonna have to get this check back. I'm gonna have to, I just knew it was over because I wasn't gonna publish it. And I didn't feel like it was a story that could live outside of me. Like, you would need me to read it to you. And I had to infer with these, you know, a beat pause, or I'd have to perform like a lilt with a song so that you could, that the words would carry in my presentation. But if I'm not doing that, right, if I'm relying on this book to do the work until I'm able to meet a person, or maybe not, like whatever. And it wasn't doing that. So I had to be honest with myself. And after I wept, I called my friend Jason. I was like, okay, this is not good. Whatever you're doing, I know you're busy because you're like the national ambassador of, you know, youth literature and like, he's like an icon, like beyond busy. But I'm about to lose it. I don't know how this is going to look on you because it's all over, bro. Come get me. And he was like, I got you. All right, let's just have a session. Relax. Stop crying. He had to do that thing because it was bad. I didn't understand what I was missing, but I could feel it. And they'll care less. I wanted to make sure this story was cohesive. And I was employing the language of verse and not being condemned by it.
And it is. And you did that. So thanks to Jason for whatever he, you know, helped you kind of like, you know, formulate, because you totally did that. Because yeah, I felt that in reading it, I felt like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, this is a story. You know what I mean? Like, this is a full on story. Like, and then that was such a beautiful way to put it together. And I feel affirmed because I'm like dying on every revision. I'm like, I'm working on a women's fiction debut. So with 37 Ink on Simon and like, so that helps me because I'm like, you even got the galley and was like, wait, let me go back and things. So it just, I was like, does this mean I'm just like a bad writer?
But nope.
I'm glad.
I'm never afraid of them edits. I'm afraid when there are no edits to give and yet you don't feel good about what you're seeing. You're like, this is, and you got to trust that intuition, right? Like there's going to be someone who reads and they're like, this is great. But And I had that. I have a great team at Crown, but I needed someone who knows my voice, right? Who knows the breath of my voice and who will be like, okay, well, keeping it funky with me. Like, I don't need the niceties. The tears are really just frustration. I am not soft in that way that you can't, you know, I'm not precious. Yeah. I can take critique. I can take edit. And if you love me, you will make sure my slip isn't showing, but like, please love me enough to like make sure I don't go out there looking crazy, you know?
Oh, I just think that is a whole word and a whole important word. So I hope that's sitting with everyone else as much as it's sitting with me. We have just about like 15 minutes or so left. Do you all have questions? Any questions? And don't make me call y'all out because I know some of y'all that ain't on camera and that are, but go ahead, Danielle.
Hi, Mahogany. I want to say, like, you are amazing. You inspire me. You have inspired me in so many ways. And I cannot wait to read Chlorine Sky. I have so many books that I need to read, but I'm going to add you to my list now.
Thank you, Danielle.
I'm a first time writer, this is my first time writing a novel. I've written on and off. And my question was about, you know, what you talked about with voice. And my question was, how do you find your voice and how do you, like, I guess, maintain and continue to like stay true to your voice as you're writing and as you're going through the writing process?
So one thing I did with Chlorine Sky specifically, I got really self-conscious about the way, how familiar the young people speak. And for like an instance, I was like, well, maybe I should not say ain't, maybe I should, you know, fix it. And then I thought, well, that's not authentic to what's happening. Yeah. Kids are gonna be on the basketball court, they're gonna say ain't, they're gonna say all these things. So if we are really truly trying to be the wordsmiths who are also archivists, right, then we need to allow there to be room for all of the many ways in which we congregate, and language is one of them. So when I decided, okay, I want to have a more mature voice to show like the reader that there is a variation in age and in sound, like the verbiage, the vernacular. We have it differently when we're young and then when we're adults, you know, when we're teenagers and then when we're teachers. And I wanted all of those to be present. I didn't want to like diminish one because it's considered, you know, AAVE. I decided I would be okay with allowing this part of us to be a reflection to, mm-hmm. And just add all those other voices, those different layers in Inga or the mom, even when she says, you know, she's very specific, don't do this, don't do this. But then she'll be like, ain't none of y'all take that, you know, like she like dropped back in, which I felt like was really honest. Because mm-hmm. the mom's is already, she's like ready for job and she's ready for job. Like what you want, she got it. And she can like switch it all the time. And it's not about code switching. It's about responding to what this moment requires. Right. And you're taking my kindness for weakness. So let me bring you back solid real quick. Mm-hmm. Don't act like we poor out there or else, right? Don't call my phone. Don't fight. Ain't nobody got no chick. What the hell's wrong with you? Like I wanted that, like I wanted that tension. So I would say if you find yourself struggling with the authenticity of your own voice, look at the work that you love the most, your work, not someone else. Look at your work and like try to channel that.
Right.
Channel that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The absolutely. Balance, the balance of that for sure.
Yeah.
Other questions?
I have one.
Oh, sure. Go for it.
Hello.
Hi. Oh, my. I am just like smiling because everything you said, I can't wait to get this book. That's what I want to say first. And I want to say thank you for your generous, like just how real you were with your experience. And so the question that I have is about the galley, because I hope to get there. Mm-hmm. And when you felt that feeling that it wasn't right, how did your agent and the publisher respond?
So my agent, she's great. She's like, whatever you want to do, Mahogany, let's go. I'll fight for you, which is, that's the first thing you need. I hope everyone has an agent. They will sell your ideas. I sold Chlorine Sky on 30 pages, right? And that was huge. 30 pages, three different editors. And that was huge. But my editor that took Chlorine Sky, when I had that moment, I was like, you need to call me. Cause I was scared to even put it in writing. I was like, you just gotta call me. And so then she called and she's like, is everything okay? And I was like, this is horrible. I hate it. I don't want to do this. I'm sorry. And she was like, it's okay. That's what galleys are for you to make changes. And I was like, oh, I thought this was like, y'all going to print now, because that's what I know about galleys. You get the, you know, you get your printed copy first. You say, yep, there's one line that needs to fix and then that's it. That's but I needed 30 pages additional, right? I went from 97 pages print to 178. So it almost doubled, right? And I was like, if that's not okay, I don't know what to tell you, but I don't want this book anywhere in the world. And I kept a copy just so I could remind myself that we create things that need work all the time. And they can be as close to our dream as possible and still not what we want, not good enough. We know we're better. We know we're stronger. I don't want to be lax because I have an opportunity. I want to be as hungry for this book and the next as I was when I was doing those chapbooks. You know, and I just had to be okay with it. I had to be okay with her saying it's too late, because I was willing to give that check back. She did not. She is lovely. She's all things amazing. And she definitely allows me to like have those little bursts of anxiety without taking it personal.
Well, Ashe, for you, for not being lax and for saying that it's worth me, not the book.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, thank you.
I think it speaks to an important part too of like this idea of you are the master of your fate. Like I think sometimes as authors, as writers, we tend to think like someone's giving us this opportunity, right? Like, and then we have to like, you know, bend and mold ourselves to fit into this opportunity, when really no, like you kind of are the prize, as my That's mom right. would say. My mom likes to say, like, you're the prize, you know, like, and not in an arrogant way, but in a way where, to your point, Mahogany, like how I want to put my work out into the world needs to be this. Yeah. And you get to say that, you know, so you can't be afraid to get so caught up in the machine that like you're not being true to yourself, because it's still your project. These people right. are here to help you bring it to life in the best way possible, but it's right. still yours. Yeah,
that's right. And you want to love it. You want to love it. I wanted that book to be out in the world and me to not get tired of reading it. right? Mm-hmm. But if you put out some work that you're just like, I'm just waiting for this to be over, you'll never want to share that book. Mm-hmm. And people can tell, right? Like, they'll know. So really, who wins when you put out a book you don't love? When you put out any project you don't love? When you do a collaboration you're not rocking with? Who really wins? The opportunities only exist because of the love that you have.
Absolutely. Do we have other questions? So I want to make sure we get to those.
Hi, yes, I have a question.
Hi.
Hi, my name is Zakari. I just want to echo what everyone else is saying. Like, this has been really incredible. And I'm normally not into young adult. I feel like because I haven't found people really capture that youth voice, but I just love the conversations and the excerpts. And I just know that it will be something really powerful to reflect back my own Black girlhood. So I'm really excited about Chlorine Sky. And I wanted to ask a little bit about how you started like bridging the relationship between your writing, sort of this more private act, and bringing it into the public and really creating a following. And just to what you were saying earlier about, you know, you were speaking to a group of 2000 and then this publisher says, well, you don't have a following. Can you talk about what you really had to invest as someone who's doing this independently and the self-publishing to grow a following?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. So the poetry world, right, is wild different, I think, than YA, then adult fiction, then sci-fi. Like, poetry is its own bubble. And the Venn diagram between poetry and the rest of the publishing world is a sliver, right? So when these people told me this, I thought it was, I mean, I was sad. And then, like, they literally told me this while I was on tour. So I had to, like, be mindful of, is this who you trust with 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 your career? Like, is that the voice you trust? Because you're actually on tour right now. Like, you have to be mindful of that. So I just had to work as if I was a company of my own. That means I was, you know, investing my income tax refund check every year to just publishing. And that was about $3,000. And whatever the books did not make in sales, there was this chunk waiting. But literally, I used to sell about, I'd say 1,000 books every 3 months out of my pocket, out of my back pocket, right? And that's how I grew those conversations online, because I was constantly touring. I think I toured about 3 weeks a month, 3 weeks out of a month was the average for the first 2-3 years. And then it slowed down a bit, but it became bigger. I also wrote it into those contracts as a lecturer or a performance person, a performance guest, that you had to buy books for the student group that was bringing me. And that way I knew that I was moving, you know, the books as well. So yeah, just the mindfulness around working, who I'm working with, where I'm performing, and making sure that that book was getting into their hands. That was one. Growing the conversation online, I really had to learn. Like, Aja Monet was amazing at teaching my old woman self, like, why Twitter was important. I would not get on Instagram. I was like, I don't need it. And she's like, no, you have to do this too. Like, she literally got me into all of these spaces. And I'm like, I find myself running to keep up. And once I stopped, like, worrying about keeping up and just did the thing that I cared about, like, I will put up a picture of a book. I will put up pictures of me and my friends. I had to stop doing as much personal stuff because I had a bit of a stalker. Changed my number and everything, because once Woke Baby came out, then I was added to this thing called the red flag list, or the red flag wave or something. They're like Trump people, and they basically believe Woke Baby breeds liberal babies and is therefore it should be restricted text from kindergarten classes. And they actually put it up on Fox News 2 days ago. So they're still talking about how it's bad because I see, you know, babies are revolutionary because they don't sleep, they just rest. I also say Panther's paw. Huh?
I'm sorry, that's how you know it's powerful.
Exactly, because the haters, like, listen, the hate, when the haters still come for you, that means you're doing it right. So I stopped feeling, you know, some kind of way and was just like, it's all right. Every time you get upset, I'm going to say, woke baby, I will do the woke baby poem. No problem. I'm going to meet you where you at. But it required a lot of heavy lifting in spaces that felt really uncomfortable. Online felt really uncomfortable. And I just had to find my footing. And that's been all right. It's been all right now. Yeah. I don't know if that answered the question. I hope that helps.
It definitely did. It definitely did. Thank you.
Oh, you said, how do you get from reading it? How do you share it? Like, what is that process? Mm-hmm. I would say your workshop groups are like chef's kiss. Once you're sharing in a circle of 3 to 5, it's nothing to say, all right, I'm going to go to the open mic or I'm going to sign up online and do a quick share out. And that helps you figure out what voice is really hitting the air right. You know what I mean? Because when I read Blurred Vision, the poem that opens this, until I saw it in a space with other people and of all walks of life, it wasn't just Black girls in the room. Until I saw it hit that room, I was like, oh, okay. This is the line that needs to come out. Like sonically, I was able to engage, but also as a writer, I was able to edit. So the next time I know, they don't need more than this. Like, this is the real meat. You know, this is the sauce over here. This is the thing that you can do. But all of that happened because I performed it and I watched the audience respond.
So important. My workshop group has been invaluable in my process. Yes. So for sure. Any other last questions? We have 4 minutes. So we have time for one more question if there is one. From anyone.
And I'll put my information here. You can find me at Mo Brown everywhere, on Twitter, on Insta. Perfect.
Awesome. Yep. And we'll be sharing everything out. So we'll be sharing a book in our newsletter. We have Tanya who's working on a blog post. You have champions in us, just sharing the work out because, you know, we love this opportunity to really interface with phenomenal writers and just, you know, with our small footprint, we're just trying to do as much as we can because I totally believe in lifting as we climb. So up here clawing my way and hopefully bring in all of Permission to Write alongside us. So I thank you very, very much for your time. I feel like the quarantine has taught me that, like, it really gives me just a heart towards people's time. And so I truly appreciate you and for you sharing so openly. So thank you for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Danielle. Thank you, Zakira. Is it Zakira? Did I say it wrong?
Zakari.
Thank you, Zakari. All the amazing questions. I think it was Yolanda with the E. Yolandi? Yeah, Yolande.
It was Yolanda. Yeah. It's Yolande. It's just the E silent.
Ah, Yolande. Come on, somebody. All right. I like that. Thanks, yes. Y'all. Y'all have a great weekend.
You too. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to PTW Office Hours. We hope you got something out of the conversation. You can follow us on Instagram at Permission to Write, on Twitter at Perm to Write, and stay up to date through our website, permissiontowrite.com. Join our community that works to amplify and cultivate the voices of Black writers and writers of color.